Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am host of the podcast, and on the other line is Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter covering the Bucks for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's had two pretty great games to watch so far. Well, one for sure great game, and one game that ended well anyway. The Milwaukee Bucks have taken a 2-0 series lead on the Miami Heat. They did so in impressive, ridiculous fashion on Monday night when they scored a 132-98 victory, hit 22 three-pointers, a total blowout, which was a nice supplement to Game 1 where nothing was going in. The Bucks shot 5 of 31 from 3, but they did get the last shot. That was Chris Middleton's turnaround jumper in overtime that spotted the Bucks a 2-point win, set them up now to have a big series lead as things shift back to Miami. Game 3 is Thursday night. After our main conversation, stick around. We will be hearing from Bobby Dandridge, a new inductee into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Kind of caught us by surprise. The member of the 1971 Championship Bucks team talked with Jim Ozarski earlier this year as we were looking back at the 50th anniversary of the 1971 champion and shared some thoughts that I think will be pretty interesting. So stay tuned for that at the end of this conversation. Jim Ozarski will be following along. You'll be going, right? That's what we talked about, that you're going to be on South Beach, right? Living your best life.
I will. This trip will be a little different than the last games I was in Miami, JR, back in January, when it was still, you know, middle of a pandemic. Things are obviously trending in the right directions. I think 17,000 will be allowed into American Airlines Arena, and that will decidedly be more energy and more of a home crowd for the Heat than even the Bucks experience at Fiserv Forum.
I'm sure no one's saying it out loud right now, but the city of Milwaukee is trending toward a complete, not elimination, but lessening pretty much all the restrictions by the beginning of June and certainly by midway through June. So the Bucks are going to be looking at gradually increasing capacity too. Maybe they'll have a full house if this series does shift back to Milwaukee, or if there is a second series, if there is an Eastern Conference semifinals, looking very likely that the Bucks will be able to add to their 50% capacity at this point. Jim, I'm going to start kind of, I don't want to paint this negatively because the Bucks are in a great spot, looking very good. Everybody should be really encouraged. But I remember the last time the Bucks were up 2-0 in a series in 2019. They've been up 2-0 in a different series since then. But back in 2019 against the Raptors, they were two very good teams. The Bucks absolutely, you know, looked very good in the first two games. One game a little more difficult than the other, but the Bucks were sitting pretty, and then things fell apart. I'm not suggesting the Heat are at the Raptors level from 2 years ago. It's not the case, but give me something to calm that part of my brain. The part of my brain that's like, yeah, they're looking good, but I've seen this before and it didn't end well. You know, is there any indication that we have that this could still be a series, or you feel like the Bucks have this in control?
I think really, JR, what's going to make it, make it a series, if you will, is maybe just the Heat get to go home and have that crowd and have that kind of energy and maybe the desperation factor. The Bucks are a better team. Look, when you and I talked about this before the series, I mean, really my thought was maybe the Heat would have to make them earn it a little more. But our friends over at iHeartRadio at the game, Drew and KB, JR, I told them, I picked Bucks in 5. You know, they're just a better team. And I think to calm your nerves with that question is to look how they won both games. They only score 109 points with an overtime period in game one. They make 5 three-pointers, which is absurdly low for any NBA team, quite frankly. I mean, JR, I think you and I could run out there with 3 other dudes and like, help a team make 5 three-pointers. That seems so weird in game one, yet they win. And then game two, they score 107 points by the end of the third quarter, hit 20-plus threes. And maybe you say, oh, well, that's the outlier the other way. Well, I'd venture to say they still had more points in the paint than the Heat in game two, believe it or not. Giannis made his free throws in game two with a quicker legal routine, go figure. I think the Heat are going to get one, because I think they're good enough to do that. But I the Bucks losing a series, I don't think really comes into play until they face Brooklyn, to be honest.
Well, that is certainly encouraging. Yeah, like you said, 46-44 advantage points in the paint in game two. It was a huge advantage in game one, 56 points, which, remember, this Heat team was the best in the NBA at around 41 points per game at points in the paint defense. I mean, that is, to score 56 in game one, actually, you look at that number, it's sort of The poor shooting performance sort of belies what they were able to do on the interior. And we will talk a little bit more about game one. But game two, I mean, do you just attribute this to a better shooting night? I mean, I don't know if the Bucks really made dramatic adjustments or anything. You know, they put themselves in a position where they were ready for this test, defensively, offensively. Things weren't falling in game one, and obviously they had to work for it a little bit harder. But like you said, they still won the game, which was a massively encouraging sign. And you could look at it, you know, from the Heat's perspective too. While Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo didn't play well in game one, that continued in game two, whereas the Bucks' shooting, of course, took a dramatic turn. Is it just that shots went in? Was there anything that they really did that put themselves in positions to go from one outlier extreme to the other? Or was it just a matter of trusting what's already in place and actually just having some shots fall in game two?
I think there, I mean, there definitely was an element of shots going in. I think they had far better looks. You know, I think the Heat contested a lot of those threes in game one. And look, Bryn Forbes is 0-for-3. Bobby Portis, I don't believe, took a three-pointer in game one. I don't think Pat Connaughton attempted a shot. PJ Tucker didn't either. And so a lot, I mean, that's where a lot of those threes came from, were those bench players, Forbes in particular. And while the Heat did at times close out on them, you know, you weren't seeing them being run off. I mean, you saw PJ Tucker hit an open corner three. You saw, you know, the one play that really stands out to me is you know, Bobby Portis sort of stepping through a trap. Hits Giannis at the top. Giannis couldn't get it to Bryn Forbes fast enough on the other side of the court for a wide open three-pointer. I mean, that's just that just wasn't really there in game one. So yeah, I think it was a combination of, yeah, they went in, but the Bucks did a real good job of ball movement and just, you know, getting the ball to those guys in enough time for them to make the shot.
It really does feel like their plan. I mean, that's what's so exciting about game two, is watching this plan come to fruition. You mentioned Forbes and Connaughton, 7 points between them in the first game, and then 37 in game two. I mean, that's why they brought in Bryn Forbes, to be the guy who could, you know, go out there and randomly hit 5 three-pointers. I mean, obviously you're not going to get that every game, but that's still pretty sweet. That's exactly what he's there for. Defensively, they've adjusted in a way that I think it's not like Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo are ever going to be non-factors, but those are the two best players on this Heat team. And the Bucks really struggled with them last year. I mean, last year, those guys were the X factors. This year, they're just not. I mean, Tyler Hero obviously hasn't done very well off the bench. The local guy has struggled in these first two games too. There's more than just these two guys. What do you think it is that has mitigated Butler and Adebayo? I mean, remember, Jimmy Butler was hurt late in the year. He was hurt at points throughout the season. The Bucks did not see him in the regular season. It's possible he's still ailing a little bit, but Adebayo is the one that really surprises me. I mean, we know Butler sometimes when he's cold, because he'll go through cold shooting spells, that sometimes he has to sort of feel things out a little bit. But Adebayo was such a force against the Bucks last year. We just have not seen that version of him this season.
No, and I mean, look, it's I think the biggest reason isn't so much the Heat, although Eric Spoelstra was kind of funny. JR, in the pregame yesterday, he was asked about last year, you know, again, and frankly, Spoelstra's like, you know, honestly, who cares? He's like, they're different. And I think while Adebayo took a step and is a better overall player than he was a year ago, the Heat as a squad just aren't. I mean, you know, I think Jimmy Butler's still very good. I don't think he's like limited right now. I don't think he's playing hurt. Oh, maybe. You know, if there's any hockey player that plays NBA, it's Jimmy Butler. So, like, would we be shocked if, like, you know, like a hockey player after the season, Jimmy Butler has some surgery because he's been playing on, like, a, you know, a broken back for 4 months? Like, that wouldn't shock anybody, right? But, no, it's really, you know, JR, I think this is more about the Bucks than it is the Heat. And I think the fact that the Bucks showed they can – look, in game two, they ran full court press. I mean, who does that in the NBA?
right? Like,
yeah,
they decided, you know, last year Giannis didn't guard Jimmy Butler one-on-one. Well, guess what? Now Giannis is on Jimmy Butler one-on-one. And you mentioned Bam Adebayo. Well, you know what? Brooke Lopez, like, is still bigger than him. So I think it's more about how the Bucks learned from last year than it is what the Heat can and can't do, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Brooke Lopez has been great. I mean, defensively, he's just up to all of his old tricks and some new ones. I mean, he's been really good in this playoff series so far. And I didn't even finish my thought. I mean, on the way this plan has come together, Jrue Holiday has been absolutely exactly the special ingredient that they hoped they were getting when they added him. You got PJ Tucker getting 17, 18 minutes a game, using him in defense. Yes, he hits a corner open three, which was awesome and part of the ridiculousness of game two, but he's doing what he's there to do. And this is absolutely the best version of the Bucks. I guess what would concern you? Is there anything? I mean, you know, game one was a slog, but they pulled it out. Is there anything, and not necessarily for the Heat series, but for what's to come beyond, are there still things that you look at from these first two games and say, I mean, that'll be okay now in the first round, but this team still has to prove they can do X, Y, and Z before you can say they can go out there and beat the Nets or the 76ers?
Yeah, you know, JR, it's really the Nets.
Yeah,
I think they could beat the 76ers.
Yeah, I didn't even mean to throw them in there. You know, the top seed, but like,
right.
I don't even feel convinced the 76ers are going to be there in the Eastern Conference Finals. Maybe that's crazy, but you're right. I see the Nets as by far the bigger issue.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not to knock, you know, the 76ers. I mean, they're a good team, and they played, you know, the Bucks without their core three together as well. I just think the Bucks match up better. So now, the concern. Look, I think, you know, if there's a game, you know, in these next two where Miami hits 23s, the math says the Bucks should lose. Like, they shouldn't win again in that way. And look, I could see the Heat hitting 23s. Like, that's kind of how the Bucks are playing this right now, and why totally deviate from it while you're winning. Like, you don't fix what's broken. You know, maybe you shine up the rims or the wheel well or whatever, but you don't change the tire. So for me, it is about the Nets, and I still kind of wonder if some of these things can work when you have three dynamic scorers like that. And I don't think there's any way to replicate for that, JR, right? Like, how do you say, okay, well, put Giannis on Jimmy Butler. Okay. So now you say, put Giannis on Kevin Durant. Cool. Jrue Holiday on James Harden. And now you're still dealing with Kyrie. Like, so I don't know if there's a way, and you can't do that, of course. You can't just have those guys just handle that all by themselves and, you know, foul trouble and their offensive duties as well. So I think there is room for, you know, I don't know, I wouldn't call it concern, but room for wonder. I just don't know if we could find that out until they actually play game one of the Eastern semis, and we could kind of break it down then.
Yeah, even in the regular season, they didn't get a chance to see those guys, like you said, so they didn't even get a real, true proving ground. I think the thing that's scary about the Nets is it feels like the sky's the limit for them, and everything, a chance to beat them hinges on the Nets more than any other team. Like, it's not what the Bucks can really do to the Nets. The Bucks need the Nets to have those three guys have issues with each other, not being able to find the right chemistry because they haven't played as much this year as I'm sure they would have liked to. All three of those guys are characters and have, you know, have had various hangups over the years. Who knows when the spotlight is on and temperature gets ratcheted up, if they are able to do what they are normally capable of. But yeah, those are things that are pretty, you don't want to be hitching your wagon to those things happening as being the reason why this Bucks team can beat the Nets. So it is still, I still think the Nets are going to be a big problem. Break away from the webcam and start living life this summer with Milwaukee Sports and Social. Introducing Milwaukee Sports and Social, a brand new recreational co-ed softball and kickball league for the city of Milwaukee that's designed to help you and your friends make the most out of summer 2021. Register as an individual or sign up with a few friends as a partial team. Milwaukee Sports and Social will then fill out your roster with fun Milwaukee locals who you can have a great summer with. Registration is only $99 per person, but listeners can take $5 off their registration with code BASKETBALL at checkout. Start enjoying your social life again. Register today at MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. That's MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. Let's go back to game one. Let's use this as yet another opportunity to shower some appreciation on Chris Middleton. He hit, that was a Kobe play. You know, the game-winning shot is a create a jump shot out of absolutely nothing, you know, ball. And knowing that they have a two-time MVP on this team, that this guy is still going to be the one to take big shots like that. And he's done it before in the playoffs, and he'll do it again. And I was out for a walk with my kids, and I overheard somebody, presumably coming back from the Bucks game Saturday night, and I overheard somebody say, "Oh, Chris Middleton is finally living up to some of his contract, huh?" And I'm just shaking my head like, have you watched the man play? He's so good. He's done stuff like this over and over and over again. But yet another great moment from Chris Middleton, from the Milwaukee Bucks and their playoff history. They don't have many buzzer beaters or close to buzzer beaters in their playoff history. And this was truly great. And it shifts the entire conversation about this series, you know, allowing the Bucks to take that first game and now have a 2-0 lead. Let's just shower Chris Middleton with love. What he's so good. What does he bring to the table that people still aren't recognizing?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this at various points too, JR, right? The season when, you know, he was sort of on pace for that magical, you know, 40, 50, 90 shooting split when he didn't make the All-Star team, you know, but I voted for him for third team All-NBA. He is a two-way player. Maybe not the level of individual defender as Jrue Holiday and Giannis Antetokounmpo, but very willing and a problem. Yeah, offensively, I think it's funny, JR, because you said like is like a Kobe like shot, right? Or any sort of, you know, star player who can create his own. It's just that Chris, like, it was an understated game winner. Like he kind of like, you know, scoots off to the side. There's like this step back, but he can create this little sliver of space over a big defender in Duncan Robinson and make a mid-range shot. Like, who makes mid-range shots? It's like Chris Middleton and Kawhi Leonard, right? So I think that's why he is underappreciated even in his own fan base, is that it's not sexy. Like, he has 26-6 or 22-5-7 or, you know, the occasional double-double, and it's always sort of an afterthought. You know, it's I'm not going to say it's effortless, because we've seen him like have to work for stuff. Like, he's not like a pure just fill it up guy where you're like a Durant, or like even when Jabari Parker was healthy and looking good for the Bucks, like he'd be done with a game with 22 and you're like, how, like he didn't look like he tried, you know? So I think that's why he gets sort of lost in not just the hometown fan base, JR, but even nationally. But let's face it, you hit game winners in game winners in the playoffs, and your team continues to advance, or you're that guy, you know, that love's going to come. And, you know, he does this one or two more times and they go to the finals. You know, you can pencil him in for an All-Star next year, regardless of how he starts.
That is true. The basket gave him 27 points, like you mentioned, 27-6. He was the leading scorer then from game one. Giannis just a point behind him, 26, 18 rebounds, 5 assists for Giannis, a typical great line. Although you did see some buzz about the final play of regulation where Jimmy Butler drove right past him, put in a shot at the buzzer to force overtime. It would have been a play on Bucks fans' minds if the Bucks had gone on and lost that game. But you know, you've written a lot over the year and about Giannis's work to improve. You know, even as this two-time MVP, he's constantly trying to put himself in position to be at his best in this moment. I think even with that stat line, game one for him and a lot of Bucks wasn't necessarily his shining moment or anything in his Bucks career, but he was able to still create a lot of problems. What did you see out of Giannis here in these first two games?
I think, JR, what you've seen is a confident player in the postseason. And meaning, you know, that, yeah, he was taking threes. And, yeah, he opened up game two with a three-pointer. And, yeah, he missed them in game one. But Chris Middleton even said it. He's like, he didn't stop taking the shots he's worked on. And, yeah, that matters. And you know why it matters? Because in game one, Jimmy Butler closed out on Giannis on the three-point line. And what happened? Jrue Holiday was wide open in the corner. And yes, that particular play, Giannis kind of rushed the feed. Holiday had to move off the spot. It wasn't catch and shoot. It wasn't clean. But that's important. When you win, or if you're the Bucks, if you win, you know, later, if you get Jimmy Butler to commit to Giannis on a three-pointer, what does that say? Right? Scouting report goes out the window. Oh, give him that shot. No, when you're a human and the man is either shooting threes or looks good or is confident whether it goes in or not, they're going to commit to it. And it's going to open up that ball. So, yeah, that's what I saw. I saw a guy, you know, kind of continue on that path from the game or from the season. And I'll even give him credit. You know, he was whistled for 10 seconds in game one. And, you know, he shortened up the routine and made more free throws in game two.
I am glad you brought up the 10-second call, because what in the world? Now, this is absolutely in the category of when you should and shouldn't make a call, which is always dangerous because the rule book is the rule book and there's always a defense to be made for making the correct call. Giannis takes a long time on his free throws. That's something that I think has kind of more this year than ever before. That's obviously been an area of, you know, of concern for Giannis over his career. He has improved in his free throw shooting, but it's a long, drawn out process. It takes forever, and it certainly takes more than the allotted 10 seconds. And with just over 1 minute to play in a tight game, a tight playoff game, that's the moment that the referee decides we're going to blow the whistle. He'd had other opportunities to do that during the game. You know, Giannis took 11 seconds. I think you were the guy who timed out some of his previous free throw attempts. But over the course of the year, easily this call could have been made. It's just not something, it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen a lot. And I found that timing curious. It sounds like afterwards nobody was really too frustrated by it. I mean, they won the game, so how frustrated could somebody be? But in the moment, I mean, that could have been a major, major play. The conversation would have been very strong over that call. How do you feel about that?
Okay. You know, if you're a subscriber to the JS Online and the Journal Sentinel, thank you, you would have read on, you know, before the series that Nate McMillan said if they play the Bucks in the playoffs, he's going to go to the refs and say Giannis takes too long. You know, he was whistled for 10 seconds back on January 24th. It created the change in his routine, what it is now. And, you know, the routine works in terms of making, but he's been doing this. And so it's, if you're the Bucks, the question isn't so much that it was called, it's when it was called. Yeah. And so I can't really defend him not being whistled prior to, because he always took, JR, I timed him up to 17 seconds at times this year. I mean, you know, Dwight Howard threw a tantrum on national television. Like,
let's be honest. Like, that's brutal. Come on. Shoot the ball. I mean, right. I know he's taking his time and process, whatever. But, like, 17 seconds to shoot a free throw? My goodness. What in the world?
So, and you add in the fact he was whistled for it once before in the regular season. Mm-hmm. Now, the one minute left, and that, I believe, was his sixth free throw of the game. Look, yeah. His first one was at like 7:30 of the first quarter, his first two, I should say. He did not shoot free throws in the second quarter, the third quarter. Early in the fourth, he did. He definitely shot over 10 seconds on all of those previous four or five. So I will give Mike Budenholzer and the Bucks that they know he's over 10 seconds. He knows he's over 10 seconds. Everybody knows he's over 10 seconds. Hit him with that second free throw in the first quarter. You know what I mean? Like, or warn him, which they don't have to do, but they usually do. Warn him on the second free throw in the first quarter. First free throw of the fourth. You know, again, it's not any better, but it's not with a minute left. I can agree with that, because that's a judgment call by the officials, and they probably should have given the two-time MVP better judgment on that. Does that sound fair? Like, I feel like that's how it should have been handled. Not so much that he was actually whistled.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It's a little bit like an umpire strike zone. Be consistent. If you're going to miss every time, that's fine. Miss for both teams and just let that be the standard. But with 1 minute to go, you don't suddenly decide now is the time to blow the whistle. And yeah, we'll say it, especially that's the two-time MVP. That's one of the faces of the NBA. You don't take the ball out of his hands. Now, maybe he didn't miss the free throw, but, you know, maybe Jimmy Butler hits a three-pointer at the end of the game anyway instead of a two-pointer. Like, who knows? It doesn't necessarily mean it altered the course of the game, but it's still pretty frustrating to see all of a sudden with 1 minute to go, the standard has popped back up. That's not the thing that should be happening at that stage. It should happen earlier in the game. And just then you've got it, you know, down on paper. Hey, we're not allowing for that in this game. That would be totally fair. But fortunately for the Bucks, it does not end up coming to pass. And shout out to Coach Nate McMillan. If the Bucks do get to face him, that's going to be good news for Milwaukee. Even if Giannis has to shoot his free throws faster, it means that they got past the Nets and they will not have to face the 76ers. That would be a cool thing indeed. Trae Young with a cold-blooded game winner against the Knicks in game one of their series at Madison Square Garden. Lots of love for Trae Young's winner. Not so much for Chris Middleton's, but I'm not bitter, worried about the coverage, East Coast, etc., etc. Just going to let the Bucks just carry on, do what they do. Understated it was a word you used, and that seems to be the case with a lot of things around Chris Middleton's career, including this game winner. Before we get out of here, wanted to touch briefly on the awards voting. We talked a lot about that on our last podcast. The Bucks did not show up in any top threes. I think the only one it would have been, I guess, a little bit more likely than not would be in the MVP race, seeing Giannis in that top three. Ultimately, I think Steph Curry probably leapfrogged him late in the season because you had Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, and Stephen Curry as the top three. No complaints, really. Those guys had tremendous years, and they would all be deserving. Jokic is going to win, but like they would all be worthwhile and fair to rank them ahead of Giannis. Did you have any other takeaways or any thoughts on how things shook out to see no Bucks anywhere in the voting?
No, I think Jrue Holiday, you know, might be a little salty not being a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year, but, you know, I think those finalists were worthy. You know, that's one of those things. I think there were so many good ones. And, yeah, MVP, I guess I'm a little surprised Steph Curry edged Giannis. I'd be curious when, you know, how close that was. You know, I thought Giannis had that kind of year. I guess I'd be more surprised if he was, like, sixth. You know, or fifth or something like that. I'm not surprised that the Bucks did not have it. Look, they had an uneven regular season, if you want to call it that, at least by their recent standards. So it kind of makes sense.
I do think Jrue Holiday is going to show up in the Defensive Player of the Year discussion next year, especially if this Bucks team gets past the Nets. Certainly if they go to the NBA Finals or win the title, knock on wood, but the reputation he's developed now that he's playing for this elite level team has only skyrocketed. I think he's going to be one of the guys everybody's looking at next year. And I would think that Giannis could get back into that conversation as well. Another bit of surprise. I don't know if it was a surprise. Bobby Dandridge. We talked about him when we talked about the 1971 Bucks championship team. We did a lot of coverage of that at jsonline.com. You spoke to Bobby Dandridge and talked about his recollections from that time. He got the nod to the Pro Basketball, to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. He will be in the next induction class, the class of 2021. Kind of an awkward timing situation where the 2020 guys get inducted in, and then right away we've got the next class. Just the compressed timeline this year with all the cancellations, postponements, and whatnot. But we now know that Bobby Dandridge, key contributor, really that was a big three too. You had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you had Oscar Robertson, and you had Dandridge. Those were the big three. I mean, no disrespect, of course, to John McLaughlin or some of the other top stars on that team, but he is going to be enshrined in the Hall of Fame, and that's a pretty cool thing. I know we've got this interview coming up here where we talk to him a little bit, but did that catch you off guard that he was on that list?
Yeah, I mean, he jokes in the interview. He's like, "Well, I've been eligible for 30 years." So, you know, he said it's kind of interesting because they gave him a heads up. He had to sit on it for a few days and not tell anyone. Can you imagine that? Like, you know, hey, you're going to Hall of Fame, but don't tell anybody, you know. I think he said he wasn't surprised. He had a fun story. Jay Miller, the Villanova coach, or Jay Wright, excuse me, met him in sort of their suite and was like, wait a minute, you're not already in. So he, yeah. So there's a couple fun little Bob Dandridge anecdotes and stories, but yeah, I was a little surprised. We knew Marcus Johnson was a finalist. And I guess, JR, if you think about it, you're like, wow, okay, all of the players who have retired are like eligible, right, in this veterans committee. So it just didn't, yeah, you know, it wasn't like top of mind because he's not a campaigner. The whole conversation we all had with him for this 50th anniversary project, I mean, other than his teammates saying, hey, Bob's a Hall of Famer or should be a Hall of Famer, like, you know, he didn't outwardly campaign. You know, so yeah, it definitely was a slight surprise and just, oh, because you're kind of like, oh, yeah, that's right. He wasn't in. And now yeah. He is.
Yeah, Marcus Johnson will still have to wait. Tony Kukoc, whose career includes a lot of overseas playing, of course, Croatian native, who then, of course, came back to be with the Chicago Bulls and helped them to their run of titles. He had four seasons with Milwaukee. I think people forget how long he was in Milwaukee. Four seasons, he's not a Milwaukee Buck going into the Hall of Fame. He'll be identified, of course, in the minds of a lot of people as a Chicago Bull, but he gets a nod as well. The Naismith process is a little different from, I think, the baseball process gets the most scrutiny, so we know a lot about, you know, when the vote's coming, with the Veterans Committee oversees, guys are on the ballot, and then they're off the ballot if they fall below a threshold. It's a little bit less strict when you're talking about the NBA process, and yeah, Dandridge catches everybody by surprise, and he's going to be in. It's a pretty cool thing. The Bucks, you know, the Bucks don't have that many guys in the Basketball Hall of Fame, which is sort of surprising, because I feel like, you know, kind of everybody gets into the Basketball Hall of Fame if you're good. Like, certainly every MVP ever is in the Hall of Fame. So there's it's not like the, you know, the finest tooth comb necessarily. But outside of a few guys that, you know are in there, and even it's largely because recently, you know, Sidney Moncrief just went in. You know, otherwise he wouldn't have been there either. So this is a cool thing for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, it's you know what it reminds me of, JR? Bucks fans are going to hate this, but it's true. Like, it reminded me of this conversation I would have with like former players in Cincinnati for the Bengals, mm-hmm. where it was like, wait a minute. Okay. We know we haven't won any Super Bowls, but it doesn't mean we don't have Hall of Fame players, you know? And somehow they just got sort of like sucked into the abyss of like Bengaldom, you know, like, but that's not what a Hall of Fame is. The Hall of Fame is about the individual. Right. And I think my guess, JR, is that you have Marcus. Marcus is probably the best example of it, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. Of like that kind of player who didn't go to the finals, didn't win on MVP, but is he that guy? Like, was he that guy? Well, he's in Milwaukee. Oh, well, the Bucks didn't win. Like, it kind of, like, Dandridge at least has two rings with two franchises. Like, and then you go with, you know, all NBA and all that other stuff. So, that is interesting that you bring that up. Like, I wonder if that's just something, you know, that Bucks and Bucks fans have had to deal with since, you know, 1974, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you got Ray Allen, but Ray Allen, I think people will think of as a Milwaukee Buck, but the guy had, obviously, his biggest moments came elsewhere after he was dealt out of Milwaukee, which, of course, is a sore spot in the first place for Bucks fans. You know, you've got Oscar Robertson is a Buck, but also kind of not. He spent a decade in Cincinnati before he was in Milwaukee, wins the title with the Bucks, so that certainly helps his profile in Milwaukee. But yeah, there aren't many true blue Bucks that you could point to. Kareem, of course, is a guy who was here, but made his, you know, made the majority of his career happen in Los Angeles. So yeah, this is a cool thing to have somebody else on the list. But before we get to that interview, any last thoughts before I let you go?
No, looking forward to Miami. I disagree with Charles Barkley. I do think it'll be a gentleman's sweep. I think the Heat get one at home. Because A, they're scrappy, and scrappy teams that are desperate tend to and talented kind of steal one. I could see that. So I think game five at Fiserv will end this series. I mean, we'll find out. I'll be down there. Thanks to you all who listen and subscribe. I'll be bringing. We are the only outlet once again traveling to cover the Bucks as they make this playoff push, you know, 50 years after their last title. So looking forward to seeing you all in Miami.
JSOnline.com is the place to find Jim's views from the beach and also from inside the American Airlines Arena. Thanks for joining us, Jim. We'll talk to you again soon.
Talk to you then.
Here now is his interview with Bobby Dandridge, newest member of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, or will be inducted anyway in 2021. Jim caught up with him a little bit earlier this year. Here's what Bobby has to say.
I would love to know how this went for you. I know that Marcus Johnson was a finalist, but I didn't know how the Veterans Committee works. So did you know about any of this? Did you just get a call? How did it happen?
I mean, I just got a call about 8 days ahead of the actual announcement. And I was sworn to secrecy, except with my immediate family. And I waited about 4 days before I told my wife and kids. And so I just had to be careful about who I talked to about it, because I guess they didn't want it to get out ahead of the Hall's announcement.
Okay, so what was, I know that there's like designations and you were eligible, but did you even know you were being like considered for this, or was it a complete shock?
Well, you know, I knew I have been considered for the last 30 years, but I knew that, you know, with this Veterans Committee, you know, some, you know, Charlie Scott had gone in, Al Addles, and, you know, you sort of look at the list of people who are on the list on the Veterans Committee. So I said, well, damn, about time for them to get down to Bob Dandridge, and this was my year.
What, I've seen videos of, you know, people getting the call, commissioner, you know, the NFL and NBA, they do these things differently. So yeah. You get a call, and you're told that, I mean, What was the emotion there for you, I guess?
It wasn't any jumping up and down, because it was presented to me, the message that was given to me was, you know, people that were on in line were calm. You know, the executive director of the hall, I think his name is Oliva, and you know, Jerry Colangelo, and their tone was sort of low key, so I didn't want to seem out of place, but I let them know that I'm very honored and pleased and excited, and I know my friends and family would be also with me getting into the hall, because it's a tremendous honor.
Did you set something up where, like, you invited them over? Like, did you, like...
No, because, you know, my wife and I were just sitting around the house one night, and it was a game on, and she said, I wonder, would this be your year? And so I just said, let me go ahead and tell her, set her down. And I said, well, I got some good news for you. And she said, what is it? Well, I told her I had been selected to go into the Hall of Fame, inducted. You know, she cried. It was a combination of tears and smiles. And, you know, then I called my son in Austin, and he was like, sort of stunned, and said, it's about time. And my two daughters were more emotional, you know. They cried tears of joy. And then I had my two best friends, I called them, and they were excited for me, but it took everybody a day or two for it to sink in before they really began to speak on it. And so it was a somber situation, and I think for me, I think the tears and the joy will flow during the induction ceremonies, and I think that's when it will sink in to be with these elite group of athletes.
Yeah.
Male and females, you know, coaches, players, contributors. So it's an exciting time. And I guess when you read or hear the credentials of the other inductee, you realize that I'm one of many who have contributed to making this sport of basketball so great. And it's not just the athletes, but it's also can be the broadcasters, the contributors, the coaches. So the hall has expanded it to make it all inclusive and not just for the players itself.
How has you kind of joke, you've been eligible for 30 years. How have you kind of come through this? Because again, I know every athlete's different. There are some who it bothers them that it takes a long time, or like in your case, Bob, I don't know if I've ever talked to anyone who has seen you play, played with you, who in some part of the conversation said he should be in the Hall of Fame. So, like, did you ever, like, get angry or bitter about it? Or where was your headspace all these years? Is like, because I'm sure you heard the same thing.
Yeah. Well, in the earlier years, I was probably had some disappointment, some anger, and then, you know, wondering why or whatever. But then over the last 20 or so years, I realized that it's been a part of my growth too. And over the last 20 years, the last 30 years, I've been in the loop and involved with the NBA for the last 30 years, you know, I've been able to, you know, generate some income. I've held a couple of positions with the Players Association, have done some work with the Wizards and the Bucks, these two great organizations. And so the big thing is, I've been able to maintain, it's allowed me to spend time at home, you know, with my kids, and allowed me to build a good family base. And it has allowed me to work on some things to make me a better person. And so I don't consider these past 30 years as a bad point in my life. And, you know, I've developed some patience. And throughout this whole time, you know, the league, the Washington franchise, the Bucks, everybody has been just amazing. And I think that people associated with pro basketball felt that, you know, this guy should be in the Hall of Fame. And that carried me, knowing that my peers knew it. And because of the work that I've done with the teams and the leagues, I'm around the appointed Hall of Famers all the time. And I've just carried myself over the last 30 years as a Hall of Famer. And they have not, players that are in the Hall have not treated me any less. They've treated me with a whole lot of respect. And it was interesting from being up in Springfield this past weekend, I was talking to Coach Jay Wright, and the suite that we were in was for the class of 2021, and Coach Wright asked somebody, why is Bob Dandridge in here? Isn't he already in the Hall of Fame? And I would say probably 50% of the fans and people that are basketball fans anyway assumed that I was in the Hall of Fame already. And with that, that gave me a sense of security and not insecurity. So, and I, like I said, I've grown as a person and, you know, not to be so, you know, things happen in God's time. And once I was able to know that, you know, things happen in God's time, I just had to wait on him. And I learned during this time not to project anything about why it hasn't happened, who is stopping me from going in. And I just went about doing, you know, working with the hand that was dealt me. And it was, it has been an extremely good hand that I've held over the last 30 years.
The last time we talked, it was about, you know, this championship season of 50 years ago. It's yourself and Kareem and Oscar. And I know Johnny Mack, at least locally here, is a Wisconsin with his Mack Fund and all his contributions to the Bucks organization. What, I mean, it kind of puts it, all of this type of stuff, does it add a different luster to that group you had, when you look at it? I mean, you know this, it changes, right? When it says, when you pull up that team now and there's three Hall of Famers and that kind of thing, you know, I don't know if that changes anything in your mind, but, or if that's just something that, just makes it that much more special now. I don't know.
I mean, it is special because, you know, that 50 years, and for me, it's just the way, I mean, things have just fallen in place. 50 years going into the Hall of Fame, having some teammates call you, you know, the Big O and Kareem calling, Greg Smith's call, and, you know, that's just special, letting me know that, you know, there in Milwaukee we had something real special that has lasted 50 years. And I mean, our friendships have lasted 50 years and everybody in some form or fashion is still allowed to be a part of the Bucks, you know, throughout various owners and management changes, and they have respected, you know, those 50 years and that championship team and the bond that we have, and that bond still exists. And even with the city of Milwaukee, you know, we come back to do various things from the team, for the team, and it's almost like we've never left.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.